I'm Owen from Bite Size Irish Gaelic, and welcome to episode 35, Iver a Trochacuig, of the Bite Size Irish Gaelic podcast. Even if you're alone learning to speak Irish outside of Ireland, don't despair. Rest assured that there are thousands like you across the globe, all interested in tapping into Ireland's native culture. And for all about this podcast, go to www.bitesizeirishgaelic.com/podcast. And today I'm joined by Brian O'Hart, or Brian Hart. Brian, konasatatu.
Goma, konasatatu hien.
Tome arous. Well, as berler douche, turhime intro egen quit. So I'll give Brian a little intro. And it's a long list. He was the first American to win the Flachéol Championship in English singing. That was in County Kerry in 2002. He was the first American recipient of Cuireann na Ríoga, I think. He teaches Irish Gaelic in Portland, Oregon. Or that's the last info I have. He regularly tours with the legendary Northern Irish singer Len Graham. His band is called Bua. And he even sung to Uachtaráin Héireann, the president of Ireland at the time, Dr. Mary McAleese. Everyone to anachod jeinte got nachol.
Yeah, yeah. I come out false.
Oh, mahafar. Has been to Igmoin in a Gaeilge a Bortland, mean?
Yeah, being ta group ta dream war round in Idida Samir Hushkert. Agus ta an simacol.
Untach. Ach, yeah. Is America anachu? Evrien, you're an American, aren't you?
I am, yeah, yeah. And just to set the record straight, I never won the Cuireann na Ríoga. That would get me into a lot of trouble. I've never been to the Oireachtas na Gaeilge, but one day soon, I hope I'll be there and I'll enjoy it. And well, who knows? Maybe in 30 years' time, I might have a Cuireann na Ríoga under my belt. But
interesting. We'll have to do a bit of research then. I'll have to find out where I got this written information. So,
The cool conch is going around.
I got an email from Karen Reshkin lately and her husband Mike, and they were traveling from Chicago, I think. They went through Limerick, where we're based with Bite Size Irish Gaelic. Unfortunately, we didn't have the time to meet up, but they were going down to the Oireachtas this past year. So Brian, like, how would you describe yourself overall? Because like I just listed out a long list of things there, and that we'll have to cover a bit too.
How would I describe myself? Well, I would say that I'm a language and culture advocate for lots of cultures, but in particular to the Irish culture. You know, so a lot of what I've come to be doing now in my 30s. Comes from my interests that came about when I was a teenager, and my interactions with Irish kind of spawned more interests in singing in Irish, and then instrumental music, and then the Shannos dancing, and it kind of meshed with education. You know, when I was doing my tertiary education there in the States and then over in Ireland, it just, I kind of kept having paths in front of me that I was just following to seeing where they would take me. And, you know, with all the generosity of Irish speakers and musicians and people like that, you know, heads of departments granting me funds to go and do my travels and my studies and stuff like that. I find myself doing lots of things, most of them focusing on the promotion of the Irish language and its inherent cultural arts like Shannos dancing and Shannos singing and things like that.
Oh, excellent. And we're proud of you. We'll dig into some of this, and I think you spent a bit of time in Ireland as well, but
just a bit.
Yeah, so bring us back though. Like, whereabouts did you grow up?
Well, I was born in St. Louis, Missouri, and my family is actually from just outside of Louisville, in southern Indiana, which is two states away. But my parents kind of left their rural environs and came to St. Louis for kind of white collar work when it was still to be had in the States. And I was born there, and my younger sister was born there. And I'd say maybe when I was in junior high, I came across the Irish language. Probably, I'm certain it was on public radio, so NPR. And it was either Enya or Clonid or maybe Planxty, where there was a song in Irish. And it really, at that time, I was starting to really make use of my library card and kind of travel the world through books. And when I found out there was an Irish language, I was so taken by the idea of what I thought Ireland was, kind of being shattered with this new concept that there's a different Ireland there, you know? And that kind of started things off on, you know, I've been a singer my whole life. I've been one of those kids that never shuts up and always makes up songs and keeps himself entertained while he's cleaning and when he's in bed, when he should be sleeping, you know, making up words to songs I thought I knew but don't really know. So when it came to Irish and the Irish language, I immediately jumped into the singing tradition because that was what was probably nearest and dearest to me. And I really fell in love, deeply in love with that tradition, the Seanós singing tradition.
And was it that you had an Irish background growing up?
Well, like most Americans, you know, we all have Irish coming from... It's a hard thing to describe to non-Americans because this is concept, you know, in America is that you have this melting pot and you have generations of people coming from different countries from all the world coming at different times and kind of coalescing to create a unique person, a unique family. And even though you might be living in a city that has stronger ties to different parts of the world, you know, you find yourself kind of grasping for an identity because American is great, but American lacks really some of the deeper cultural roots that I think a lot of people in America yearn for. And don't get me wrong, I have strong roots in the Appalachian and the Ohio Valley, you know, and the music there and the people there for several hundred years. But certainly a lot of that and the stories of my family are flavored by the Irish experience. And so I wasn't born into an Irish, you know, the typical mm-hmm. Irish American Catholic family. You know, I was born into a kind of a hillbilly community, not St. Louis, but a family that was very much ensconced in the hillbilly tradition of, you know, the Scots-Irish or the Ulster Scots that came over and mixed with other populations, you know. And then I was infused with other Irish, you know, relatives from relations from the rest of Ireland as well as Scottish and Welsh and Native American and Eastern European, you know, to create me, uniquely me. But with the experiences that I've had in my life and the opportunities I've had to really travel to Ireland and to ensconce myself, I feel very culturally Irish, but not very culturally Irish-American, which is kind of a conundrum at times, you know.
Interesting.
I don't identify as Catholic. I don't identify with, I have an auntie in Ireland or my grandparents from Ireland. For me, my experience, you know, I've spent most of my formative years either living in Ireland or traveling to Ireland and building friendships and connections there for over two decades now. So it's an interesting world we live in when you can do that, you know?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And it wouldn't have been possible, like, even a generation ago, maybe. But, Brian, what did you mean by you were able to get into an other Ireland through singing? What was that?
I think that the way that I've experienced, especially my youth, what Ireland was, or the way that it's promoted oftentimes through the somewhat like nationalist American approach, you know, which is very much based in a nationalist history and very much based in an aristocratic kind of literary tradition, to finding the folklore tied in with the Irish language and the different Ireland that represented and illustrated for me. It pretty much created two very distinct pictures of Ireland. One that was, I think, more commonly accepted and readily available to people, and another that is a bit more hidden and difficult to access without the use of the language, without ability within the language.
So tell me more. What do you mean?
Well, when I went to Chicago for the first time, Chicago has a huge music community, you know, and there's lots of musicians around there playing music. A lot of them that are American born, a lot of that are Irish born. Most of them, you know, native English speakers wouldn't have much Irish. And then it took several visits there for me to find a few native speakers of Irish who in and of themselves kind of participated in Irish music, but only in the way that they would show up to listen to a session and on the odd occasion be asked for a song. But then there was a smaller community there of native speakers that from time to time would gather together for an Iha Arnyal at the, you know, Irish American Heritage Center there on the north side of Chicago. And all of a sudden you had a completely different group of people congregated in a tight space, speaking a different language and really focusing on different aspects of the culture, most distinctly on the singing tradition and the storytelling tradition.
Hmm. So I'm still trying to grab a concept of that. Like, is it that it's kind of somehow a true cultural experience? I'm trying to put it into words.
It's a true cultural experience. It's just a different cultural experience that I think most people, maybe if you pulled your typical Irish American off the street and put them into that context, it would seem very different from their concept of what Ireland has meant to them and their experience in Ireland through their family. You know,
like, what are there any big differences you could put into words that you would find between that Ireland and the Ireland that you were able to experience?
Well, certainly the language was a huge factor to that. You know, the Irish speaking company that you find yourself in time to time in America has these kind of ties that take you to particular places within the Gaeltacht. And that has been a very different experience, I think, than a lot of people who talk about, oh, you know, my family's from Cork or my family's from Galway or this and that. And it's not maybe as specific sometimes as, you know, the sense of place within a Gaeltacht and within those families and those relations there. It just seems that when I was introduced to Irish speakers in Chicago and went over to the Gaeltacht for the first time, there was an immediate connection and recognition. Even though I didn't have family relations there, I had definitely made connections with singers and speakers, and I was immediately kind of drawn in and included in certain aspects of the culture there more readily than maybe had I gone to other places, maybe because it was my ability to speak the language and to sing some of the songs and to connect on that cultural level, maybe.
Interesting. Yeah, and I think people listening, even if they're not of the singing type, we often hear that people are learning to speak the Irish language because of that, such a deep cultural connection it gives them. Like, it's not just watching a movie or reading a book. You're verbalizing, you're internalizing that feeling you have for Ireland. Yeah, and you get much closer to it. Actually, I had another question about songs from the Irish tradition. So you mentioned Seannós, and we should just quickly explain that Seannós just means old style, but it's a labeling to describe an old type of singing in Ireland. Yeah. I guess without music in the background, it's just
It's a bit difficult to explain, but I guess the best way to explain it is it's the way that a lot of native speakers of Irish would sing their traditional songs. It's a very particular way. And even between the Gaeltacht, there'd be different dialects of that singing style. So it's not just that it's in Irish, but it's the way that they sing it within their communities and the repertoire of songs that they sing, you know, which are very much kind of like my experience of going to the Gaeltacht for the first time. They're very much tied to specific places and people and families, you know.
Yeah, and do the songs, like, have you looked at the songs? Do they tell you anything about the stories behind them or about the people in the community?
Well, sometimes they do. One of the big differences between, you know, lyrical song, which is the bulk of Seannós songs that you would sing in the Seannós tradition, are called lyrical songs. Like, they kind of hide and mask the identities in certain situations. But there are definitely songs that lament, you know, sinking boats and the death of certain people, which are very closely tied to communities and stuff like that. What's really, really cool about the tradition, I suppose, when you're able to access it through the language, is that you find out the udar, or the biddy, or the shtail, the background to the songs, and the songs take on new meanings or deeper meanings that at a superficial level are quite still beautiful, but maybe ring a little hollow in terms of what they have to offer in regards to a story. But when you find out the background, I think it just relays a wealth of information that unfortunately or maybe fortunately is not conveyed in the context of the song.
Is there any particular song that you very much enjoy? Maybe you know a bit of the story behind it?
Well, there's a couple interesting songs. One is called Eleanor Room, and it's a song that has I've heard an interesting background to it, but it was about a fella in the town who had fallen in love with kind of a nobleman's daughter, and she went into a shoe store one day, or a cobbler, to get a pair of shoes made, and as she left, this young man came into the shop and demanded that he make one of her shoes. And so he made one of her shoes, but the cobbler only offered for him to make one of the shoes, not the entire pair. So the cobbler made one shoe, and this man made the other shoe, and he wove kind of a charm into the shoe that it would sing his praises every time she wore it. And so when she came back and collected the shoes, and she wore the shoes, and she heard the praises out of the one shoe, she demanded, you know, to know the identity of this man. And the man had composed a song for her, you know. So the song itself kind of is a statement of how much he's in love with this woman and how magical she is, and that, you know, her beautiful voice could call the birds down from the trees and could raise the dead, and she had other talents that he wouldn't suggest or mention. And he says, hers is the sweetest kiss, you know, and it would be good for her to know who would stand by her and love her. So it's a great song.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing. I know that you have a band called Bua. So do you tour with Bua?
Yeah, actually, we just finished a tour here in the Pacific Northwest. We've been on a bit of a break because one of the bandmates' wives had their first baby. So it was kind of waiting to see how much time that would take, if it was going to be a difficult child, or if the wife needed more help at home or whatever. So luckily, they had a really relaxed baby boy, and we've been able to pick up where we left off. So we were just on tour here in the Pacific Northwest. We toured the states of Washington and Oregon, and likely we'll get something for May, as we're working toward doing recording our fourth album sometime later in the year. So,
yeah, nice. What kind of music? How would you describe it?
Bua is definitely kind of a very traditional Irish music. It's hard to really describe. I think we really identify with Chicago and the music of Chicago and the era of Chief O'Neill, who was, you know, Francis O'Neill was the chief of police there at the turn of the century, and did a lot to collect and save Irish music when it was falling into disuse in Ireland at the time. And the musicians of that era were recorded, and a lot of their recordings were found recently on wax cylinders. And so the lift and the drive and the pairing of tunes and musicians and instruments really kind of influenced how we present our music. And our last album, Down the Green Fields, very much focused on the heritage and the music, the repertoire, and the people, the characters of Chicago, and that kind of really fed into a lot of the instrumental music. Now, the songs that we do, a lot of them come from Ireland, or a few of them were from people there in Chicago as well that I had learned from growing up. So,
we're
very much traditional, but very kind of innovative in that we focus not necessarily on making things bland, but experimenting with older sounds and, you know, re-exploring those kind of ideas that haven't really been well illustrated because there weren't many recordings made of them. So,
So is it that you kind of feature older ways of playing Irish traditional music, or explain that to me a bit more?
I think, first of all, it's tune settings. There are definitely some settings, like from Edward Cronin, who's a great fiddle player from Limerick Junction. It was one of the kind of the premier fiddlers of that area of Tipperary, where he's from. And when he came to Chicago, he was very well received as because of his ability to play for dancers in particular. But he had a very interesting way of breaking sometimes with jigs into a bar of a reel. And it just made for a really kind of sit up and listen kind of idea. And it was kind of a trick he pulled out every once in a while, and it really grabs you, you know. So I think Sean and Devin play that version of Bannis Misfortune and do that run, and it really gets people going, and it makes them think differently about, you know, about that music. Also, just the lift and the drive. Today, you know, music has come and developed the way that it has, and the lift and the drive is slightly different, and it's nice to go back and listen to the way the bouncy kind of lift that musicians had before there was a lot of accompaniment and a lot of things like baron and guitar influencing a bit of the rhythm. So those that's the kind of thing that we've been doing. Now we do have a guitarist, and we do have he does play guitar mm-hmm. and bouzouki, but there's I think more detail paid, more attention paid to those details and how maybe accompanying can alter the drive of music, and paying more attention to the kind of the natural lift that the tune gives through the instrumentation first before we go about accompanying. We've got an amazing accompanist named Brian Miller up in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. And he does a lot of listening. He's also a singer himself and does a lot of collecting. So really, it's a gift to have him because he has the insight that I think a lot of guitarists might not have, because he comes from also from a singing tradition, an unaccompanied singing tradition, you know?
Excellent. I was wondering about the name of your band, Bua. Did you come up with that?
No, actually, the current lineup, it no longer includes the original band. The original band was kind of a pub band, and they called themselves Gan Bua as kind of a joke, you know, because Gan Bua basically means like without talent, you know, or victory. So when I joined the band, and because they kind of knew that a lot of my songs were in Irish, I told them I can't really take this seriously, you know, or approach, you know, a grant, you know, an Irish grant opportunity with the name Gan Bua. Can we just maybe, I don't expect to change the name full out, but maybe can we just drop Gan and just keep Bua, you know, Bua, which means talent or gift or, there's lots of meanings for that, victory, you know. I think it's a good word and it's an easy word for people to pronounce. And for me, especially that song, Eleanor in the Ruin, the word Bua is used in that to denote this special kind of supernatural gift of calling birds down from trees or raising the dead. So I really like that. And I like the fact that it kind of resonates with what we do with, you know, bringing back older styles of music and older concepts of music and kind of bringing them back from the dead. So I think the name fits, and I think we'll keep the name.
Yeah, and for those interested who are listening, it's spelt B-U-A, right?
Yeah, B-U-A, Bua.
Brian, what's the Irish language scene like in Portland, Oregon? Because I don't really have a connection to it.
Right. Well, I didn't either. I'll be here 4 years now this March, and about half of the time here was really spent on the road. So I'm becoming more and more involved with the language scene here. And when I arrived, there were some university courses on at Merrillhurst University, which is here in the southwest portion of the city. And there was general gatherings. There was a Lá na Gaeilge event on, and then a Shannos Northwest Festival that was here off and on between Portland and Olympia. So there was kind of a scattered group of people that stretch from, say, as far south as Ashland, in the far south of the state, which borders California, all the way up to into Vancouver, BC. And this pretty much is the breadth of the Pacific Northwest. When people talk about the Pacific Northwest, it's generally those, you know, that this area here. So as I've been working with them and kind of teaching and organizing events, there seems to be more centralized force here. So I think the Irish language was probably really, it found a springboard with the O'Donnells, who moved here in the late 70s with Kevin Burke to Trina and Micheál O'Donnell from the family of the O'Donnells, who definitely are up there from the Rena Fairsta, Gaeltacht, and, you know, Hoodie Fatty Hoodie, and that family of singers. And they came here in the late 70s to Portland. And while Kevin stayed, Trina also stayed here quite a while along with Micheál. And they did a lot of recording. And I think that recording and his... the two of them, their influence on making Irish kind of audible within a community that wasn't very strong in terms of its historical connection to Ireland really made an impact. And I think that a lot of learners who are here now and a lot of musicians who tend to be in their middle age, you know, if not older, are repositories of the traditions that Kevin Burke brought and the O'Donnells brought here. And a bit of that is Irish and interest in Irish and an interest in the repertoire of Micheál O'Donnell and some of the songs that he sang here and on the recordings that he made here with local musicians.
So you find that there's a good overlap between Irish language learners and people interested in singing and the music?
There is definitely some overlap. Yeah, there's definitely overlap. And there's definitely an exchange between communities in Seattle and down here in Portland and the smaller communities between, you know, Eugene and Salem and Olympia and things like that. So there's definitely some overlap, and there's definitely a movement of people and ideas up and down the coast a lot.
Yeah, tell me, is there an Irish language immersion, like, weekend or anything that you run?
Here in Portland, yeah, we've just, usually Merrill Hurst was the host of Lá na Gaeilge, usually around, I think it was run during May. And recently, just there's kind of been some reorganization at the university, and they've stopped hosting it. So we created a festival called Féile Portland, and that really focuses on an immersion weekend where we have Shannos dancing and singing workshops, and then kind of some strenuous Irish language lifting for a day, you know. And we've, in the past, with the nonprofit that I've worked for with called Language Hunters, we've done weekend immersion through gameplay, and we've done a week-long immersion actually one summer just to experiment with some of the techniques that we use for gamifying language. And so there is definitely, at least once a year, some sort of immersive weekend experience or day-long Irish language event that pulls in from, you know, Washington and Oregon and California and some other areas.
I love it. Brian, yeah. It just came to mind that only yesterday I was reading an email from Patrick Farrell, and I'll just read it out to you quickly before we finish, just okay. To get your input. What would you tell him? And it might be just to come to these events. So Patrick said, I've been listening to your lessons on Spotify and getting comfortable with Irish. That'd be the Learn Irish with Owen album. I feel like I could greet somebody confidently, order a pint, but I'm hoping to do more. I'm a conversational learner, and as such, was wondering if you knew of any Gaelic speakers in the Pacific Northwestern US. I'm about 50 miles south of Portland, Oregon, near our state's capital city of Salem. 50 miles sounds like a lot. It does to an Irish person.
To an Irish person, it does, yeah.
But things
that's
are
about
very...
a 40-minute drive on the highway, so it's not too
bad. Yeah, not too bad. It's that's a big, long drive across the west roads of County Clare. But
sure.
So Patrick said, but things are very spread out here on the west coast. I travel 75 miles one way to work each day. So if you know of anyone, please feel free to forward my email address, and I'd love to be able to converse with an Irish Gaelic speaker if such a thing exists near me. So Brian, what would you advise to Patrick? Because it definitely sounds like he could reach out. And I'm asking this because no matter where our listeners are listening right now, there's always a way to reach out somehow to somebody around you. So what do you think, Brian?
Yeah. Well, certainly if he's driving 75 miles one way to work, I don't think that he would really flinch at driving into Portland, you know, a couple times a month to engage with the speakers here. I know on Saturday mornings at Kells on Northwest 21st from 12 to 2, there's a group of speakers that gather together, and they're learners. And sometimes there are higher level speakers there to engage them and ask questions, and sometimes there's not. You know, on Tuesdays and Thursday nights here in Southeast Portland, I have game nights. I host game nights for Scots Gaelic, Irish Gaelic, Manx Gaelic. And every other Thursday is a conversational group for kind of intermediate speakers, you know, novice to intermediate speakers. And then there is an occasional gathering of the higher speakers, people who have either come from Ireland or who are quite fluent in Irish. And we gather together and do some cultural things. And we've just started monthly events, one event a month, usually on a Friday, where all the groups kind of come together and do something. You know, in the month of December, it was singing Christmas carols in Irish and playing card games. And this month might be speed dating or 20 questions or something like that, you know, something light and easy that's fun, but also to be able to socialize and to meet the local Goyagori in the area, you know. So I think that's something that he could definitely do. And he's right to look, you know, to look to socializing and using it within his community. So.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I told him. Like that point, I told him, you're doing the right thing right now, just looking for people.
Exactly.
So yeah, we hear a lot from people who feel like they are alone. They don't know anybody who's learning to speak the language, but you just reach out online, and even if there's something not within range of like a monthly gathering, think about whether there's like a yearly like immersion weekend that takes beginners that you could just travel for the weekend.
And there attend. Certainly are. Yeah, there's certainly a weekend event in September every year down in the Bay Area in San Francisco, mm-hmm. you know, run by Nikki Ragsdale and the Cultus branch there, which is great, you know. There's events that go up. I'm in Vancouver, British Columbia, up that way. Seattle has its own weekends. The Chanos Northwest Festival has a weekend of language classes, and that's in February on President's Day weekend, you know, and here in Portland. There are plenty that could keep you busy throughout the year, and they're all fairly reasonable in terms of price.
Mm, excellent. Well, Patrick, you should go for it. Brian, I have to say thanks a lot. So I'll ask you, what's the best way for people to find like your work and say albums you've published, that type of thing?
I wish I could say I had a website, but I don't.
Oh no, you don't.
Not yet. It's long, you know, with all the different groups that I work with, it seems silly to have a central website. Well, it seems logical to have a central website, but I've been just too busy with all these other groups to kind of do that on my own. But the best way to reach me is just send me an email, ohart@gmail.com. It's probably the best. Or brian@languagehunters.org. It's probably the easiest way to get in touch with me, and I could, you know, put you in contact with other people and give you information about the various groups and events going on in the Pacific Northwest easily.
Excellent. And just for the record, could you spell out ohart@gmail.com?
ohart@gmail.com.
Excellent. Well, Brian, gramila mahagut vishe gahun to a kind latinov, gramila mahagut. Well, to leave a comment for Brian, you could do it on our podcast show notes page. And to do that, you go to bitesizeirishgaelic.com/podcast and go to episode 35. And you can just leave a reply on the show notes. We do close the comments after a few weeks, so you have to be pretty quick to come to the show notes page. If you're loving the show, the best you can do for us is to write a written review on iTunes. And the reason we ask for that each episode is that the more people who review and like the podcast, the more iTunes spreads the word and more people find us. And it's great to be able to spread our word about the Irish language further and further. And it's always great to hear from people, no matter where they are, that they're learning even just a couple of words of the Irish language. So you can send questions as well to info@bitesizeirishgaelic.com. Or if you've got ideas or suggestions with stuff we should do with the podcast into the future. And finally, thanks to Tsukumo for their music, which you hear on this episode under a Creative Commons license. Until the next episode, slán go fóill and bye for now.